Shalom, everybody. This is our fifth session in the series. And what we're studying is Yeshua from Genesis to Revelation, subtitled Understanding Our Hebraic Roots. In the last session, we're laying the foundation for understanding the second coming of Yeshua. Understanding that in his return, he's coming to bring together the 12 tribes of Israel. And the way in which that is going to happen is a parallel of the historical Egyptian redemption. In order to be able to put it in its context, we need to understand the definition of this phrase, the day of the Lord. And in our understanding of this phrase, we learned that the God of Israel told the end from the beginning, that he began to lay foundation for understanding his plan in the book of Genesis, that each day of creation represents 7,000 years of time. And the seventh day of creation, the Sabbath, when he rested, is a foreshadowing of the thousand-year Messianic era. The Messianic era is when Messiah rules and reigns in the earth, and so that time is named for him. It's called the Day of the Lord. In Psalm 90, verse 4, we were told that a day is likened unto a thousand years. And this was quoted in 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8, where Peter said, don't be ignorant that one day is with the Lord a thousand years, and a thousand years is one day. And then, in verse 10, he says, but the day of the Lord, it comes as a thief in the night. Then we looked at an understanding that the prophetic books of the Bible are written in the context of the day of the Lord. We saw that Joel was written in the context of the day of the Lord. Obadiah, Zechariah 14, the book of Zephaniah, Isaiah is written in the context of the Lord. And then John's vision in Revelation, as it says in Revelation 1:10, the setting is the day of the Lord. So the day of the Lord is a very important topic in the Bible, and that the darkness part of the day of the Lord, which we call the tribulation period, that the darkness part of the day of the Lord, or the tribulation, begins the Messianic era. It begins the day of the Lord. And what we're going to learn is, what are the events that are happening in the day of the Lord to let us understand we are at and in those days? Because it's during those days that the 12 tribes are going to be regathered. How's that going to happen? What are the circumstances that will bring that about? And generally speaking, it's a parallel of the historical Egyptian redemption. So what we're going to be covering in this session is looking into a little bit more the details of events that happen in the day of the Lord. And when we see these events happening, we will know we are in the day of the Lord. Now, in Judaism and also in Christianity, many have tried to calculate dates to determine and understand where we're at in time. But we're called to be a watchman. And Yeshua said many times, watch, watch, watch. And a watchman observes events. Historically, the watchman of a city stood on a watchtower, and he overlooked the city, and he got the bird's eye view of everything, and by seeing the big picture, he then relayed to the city, who couldn't see the big picture, what was going on, and he reported what he observed. And that's what we're supposed to do. We are to observe the events of the world, to watch for the possibility of the events in the day of the Lord to be fulfilled. I am not going to give you a complete list of events of the day of the Lord, but I am going to try to give you some of the more important and significant events that are associated with the day of the Lord. So let's begin looking at that. To me, one of the most important and significant events, which I believe is a trigger event within the day of the Lord, is when the nations of the world divide the land of Israel in the city of Jerusalem. That is a tribulation event. Now, when I've taught on this before, in Zechariah chapter 14, verse 2, when it talks about the nations dividing the city of Jerusalem, I've heard people make comment, well, hasn't that already happened? Jerusalem is divided. Guess what? Jerusalem is divided today. If you've been over to Israel, Jerusalem today is divided into four sections. But I'm talking about a dividing in the day of the Lord. That there will be a dividing in the day of the Lord. So I believe the modern fulfillment and application of the nation seeking to divide the land of Israel in the city of Jerusalem is when the nations desire and Israel commits to sign an agreement to establish a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. That is a trigger event that will lead us to the days of the Great Tribulation, the last 3.5 years, and it's in those days, the last 3.5 years, where specifically the 12 tribes of Israel will be united. So let's first look at that event. Joel, in chapter 1, verse 15, we mentioned in our last session, it speaks about the day of the Lord. Joel chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, we mentioned in the last session, it speaks about the day of the Lord. So the subject is the day of the Lord. Now, in the day of the Lord, Joel chapter 3, verse 2 says the nations will divide the land of Israel. It says, I will gather all nations, this is Joel chapter 3, verse 2, I will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and I will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they scattered among the nations and parted or divided my land. They will divide the land in the day of the Lord. Zechariah chapter 14, verse 1, the setting is the day of the Lord. Verse 2 says the nations will divide Jerusalem. I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. The city will be taken, the houses riveled, the women ravished, and half the city will go into captivity. And the residents of the people shall not be cut off from the city. So this is your first item of events that you watch for in the day of the Lord, is the creation of a Palestinian state to make East Jerusalem its capital. It's in the day of the Lord. Now, there's a prophecy in Ezekiel in chapter 36, verses 1 and 2. It says, Son of man, prophesy to the mountains of Israel, and say, you mountains of Israel, hear the word of the Lord. This is a prophecy to dirt, the mountains of Israel. What are the mountains of Israel? The mountains of Israel are the mountains of Judea and Samaria, and by extension, it includes Jerusalem, because Jerusalem is surrounded by mountains. It sits on mountains. And Judea and Samaria is commonly called, in the media, the West Bank. So this is a prophecy to the West Bank in Jerusalem. It says in Ezekiel 36, verse 2, Thus says the Lord God, because the enemy has said against you, Aha, even the ancient high places are ours in possession. The prophecy is that the enemy would say to the mountains of Israel, they belong to us. So in my modern world, is somebody saying the mountains of Israel belongs to them? Yes. It's the Arab world endorsing who they call the Palestinians to have their own state. that would include the mountains of Israel, Judea, Samaria, as well as the west, as well as the Gaza, seeking to make East Jerusalem the capital of that Palestinian state. Now, another very important event that is associated with the Day of the Lord is Jews being kicked out of their homes. Joel chapter 1, verse 15, it's the Day of the Lord. Joel chapter 2, verses 1 and 2, it's the Day of the Lord. We read earlier, the nations will divide the land. Joel chapter 3, verse 2. Now we're going to read a verse that tells us that in the Day of the Lord, Jews are being removed from their territories, from their homes. Joel chapter 3 and verse 6. The children of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have you sold to the Grecians that you might remove them far from their border. The children of Judah and Jerusalem being removed from their border. That's in the Day of the Lord, being kicked out of their homes. Now, why does it say that they were sold? Being sold is a biblical way of saying going into captivity. They're sold to the Grecians because it's in the name of establishing a democratic PLO state that Jews are being kicked out of their homes. Where does democracy come from? It's a Greek concept. So they're sold to the Grecians in the name of democracy. So here you have two big events of the Day of the Lord. The nations divide the land of Israel, the city of Jerusalem, calling the mountains of Israel their possession, which is fulfilled through the desire to create a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. And what goes along with that, Jews being kicked out of their homes. So I look at my world, and do I see the nations doing that? Have I seen these things in their development? The answer is yes. So I come to the conclusion, we are approaching and we are near the Day of the Lord. The next thing I want to state is for thought. The next thing I'm going to state is not to make an adamant remark regarding it. It's just a thought. And that is, historically speaking, 1993, September the 13th, 1993, was when the Oslo Accords were signed. In Washington, D.C., Israel, Yitzhak Rabin, President Clinton, and Yasser Arafat signed Oslo. The purpose of Oslo was to recognize Fatah and the PLO as the representative body of the Palestinian people, to work to create institutions that would become ultimately a government so that one day they could have a state. That was the purpose of Oslo. But in order for Israel to agree to that, the Palestinian representative, in this case it was Yasser Arafat, had to state he was willing to recognize Israel's right to exist. There was an exchange of letters between Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin just right before the signing of the Oslo Accords. So the modern era of this agreement that will end up being solidified in the Day of the Lord has been in process for the past 15 years. Now, am I saying that 1993 we were in the Day of the Lord? I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the process to bring us to an agreement of ultimately dividing the land, that process has been going on formally since 1993. So we've had a lot of time to recognize it, be aware of it. Now, when was Oslo and for all practical purposes, when was it declared dead? In the year 2000, when you had the outbreak of the Second Intifada. So, how long was Oslo I until it was declared dead and we had the outbreak of the Second Intifada? 7 years. So the initial agreement was being worked upon and developed to accomplish those goals before it was declared dead, 7 years. Now, in traditional evangelical Christian perspective of Bible prophecy, they're looking for a 7-year agreement. And now if we go to Isaiah chapter 28, I want to emphasize what I'm sharing with you about Oslo and the thoughts regarding it is that, it's a thought. I am not being adamant in the thought that I'm sharing. It's something for you to consider, but I'm not being adamant in it. You understand what I'm saying? Okay, in Isaiah in chapter 28, it says in verse 14, "Hear the word of the Lord, you scornful men that rule this people which is in Jerusalem. Because you have said, we have made a covenant with death and with hell." You see, is an agreement to establish a Palestinian state or an agreement to recognize the Palestinians who want to destroy you, is that in essence an agreement with death and with hell? Yeah, it hasn't stopped the killings. It says, "We are in agreement that when the overflowing scourge shall pass through, it will not come upon us, for we've made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves." So the alternative to this covenant with death and with hell is verse 16. "Thus says the Lord God, I lay in Zion for a foundation, a stone, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation. He that believes in what he's laying in Zion will not make haste." So there's a contrast between the covenant with death and with hell that's based upon lies and falsehood. There's a contrast between that and what he's laying in Zion. That's a sure foundation. There's your contrast. Now, regarding the covenant, in Isaiah 28, verse 18, it says, "Your covenant with death will be disannulled, and your agreement with hell will not stand." So I'm going to ask the question, but I am not 100% sure on the answer. I'm going to ask the question, but I am not 100% sure of the answer. Was the declaration of Oslo being dead in 2000, was that the ultimate disannulling of the covenant of Oslo? Was it? I think it could be, but I'm not going to be adamant at this point in time and say that it was. But I think it could be because there definitely was an agreement in 1993, and 7 years later it was annulled. I mean, I can't dispute that. What's interesting is after Oslo was declared dead in 2000, when Yasser Arafat declared the Second Intifada, the breakout of the rebellion, that there's something else that happened 7 years later from 2000. It's called Annapolis. In November of 2007, the nations came together and they said, "We're still going to work to get a peace agreement." They weren't basing it upon Oslo, but they were basing it upon something else that got created, which was called the Roadmap. So it's interesting, 1993, 7 years later, we have, and what else happened in the year 2000, 7 years later? That is when President Clinton, with Ehud Barak, the then Prime Minister of Israel, and Yasser Arafat sat down at Camp David, and Clinton tried to get Barak and Arafat to get a concluding agreement. The effort to do that was 7 years after Oslo. Interesting. And then 7 years after that, there is another affirmation about the The international community is committed to this process. It was Annapolis, November 2007, and they said no, but we're basing this on the roadmap that we are agreeing to. So could it be interpreted then that when this agreement is made between Israel and the PLO, with the pressure from the nations, where Israel does sign a piece of paper establishing on paper a PLO state, establishing on paper an agreement to make East Jerusalem the capital, could it be interpreted that that agreement was making strong what happened previously, was strengthening the intent of Oslo, or strengthening what was agreed at Annapolis? I think that's possible. I'm not going to be adamant about it. I think it's possible. Well, what have we traditionally read regarding Daniel chapter 9 and verse 27 in the traditional interpretation of this verse? And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. Confirm means to make strong. So you can't confirm something or make it stronger if it wasn't already there and partially weakened. So is it possible that we've already had a 7-year agreement that was annulled, but now we're looking for an agreement that will be confirmed or made strong? I don't know. But what I'm saying is, I will make this point, is that there are events that's happening in our world that's very significant prophetically, and we can't bury our heads in the sand and ignore them, because God didn't slip it here quickly upon us. This process has been going on for over 15 years, since 1993. I mean, we've had a chance to, you know, examine it, think about it, and prepare our hearts for the consequence of it. But another point that I am making is waiting and looking for an agreement that is yet still to happen, where Israel would sign an agreement with the PLO, where Israel would agree to establish a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. The nations are getting impatient about getting this to happen, and they want it to happen quickly. Now, whether they can do it quickly, I don't know. Only time will tell. But this is what we need to be watching for and not be caught off guard when it happens. Is in the day of the Lord, the nations make an agreement wherein they pressure Israel to divide the land of Israel in the city of Jerusalem. That has to be an agreement to create a Palestinian state. That is a significant event of the day of the Lord. Now, what goes with that is Joel chapter 3, verse 6, wherein the children of Judah and the children of Jerusalem are removed from their borders. What goes along with an agreement is seeing Jews being kicked out of their homes. We've already seen that in part as well. Jews, in August of 2005, 9,000-10,000 Jews were kicked out of their homes in the Gaza. And we've had smaller little communities where Jews were removed from their homes in the West Bank and Judea Samaria, 3 or 4 other communities where they've done that as well. So we've already seen this, the wind of it, already. Now, let me show you something else. And it's something to think about, but once again, the question I'm going to ask, I can't answer. And it is this, Zephaniah chapter 1, verses 14 and 15, the setting is the day of the Lord. Zephaniah 1, 14, the great day of the Lord is near. Verse 15, that day is a day of wrath, a day of trouble, of distress, a day of wasteness. So the subject is the day of the Lord. And continuing on in chapter 2, it says, for Gaza shall be forsaken. Gaza gets forsaken in the day of the Lord. That's what I know for sure. What I don't know for sure is exactly how to specifically interpret it with a modern event. Is Gaza being forsaken, Jews being kicked out of their homes in August of 2005? I could link that in that regard because I do know from Joel chapter 3 verse 6, the children of Judah and the children of Jerusalem are removed from their borders. I do know from Zechariah 14:2 that half of Jerusalem will go into captivity, which is a way of saying Jews get removed from Jerusalem. Now what part of Jerusalem would they get removed from? East Jerusalem. So I do know an issue of the day of the Lord is Jews being removed from their homes. What I can't be adamant about is that Gaza being forsaken in the day of the Lord is an event that we already witnessed, which is August of 2005. But I very could interpret it as being fulfilled in the day of the Lord because it's thematically consistent with Jews being kicked out of their homes. But does the Gaza being forsaken meaning that Israel goes in and they bomb the place like just happened a month ago? Is that Gaza being forsaken? Maybe it is. I don't know. Does it mean that the nations of the world refuse to recognize Hamas? Is that Gaza being forsaken? They're forsaking someone that's in the Gaza. I don't know. Maybe it's partially all the above. But this I do know, whatever it means, which I'm not 100% sure what it means, Gaza gets forsaken in the day of the Lord. That's what I do know. And I do know that there are things now happening in the Gaza from August of 05 to just this past month with Israel going in and bombing tunnels where Hamas was smuggling weapons, etc. And there are events happening in the Gaza. So I'm going to conclude that we're in the season of the day of the Lord. And I think, this is my opinion, I think there's a possibility, which means something greater than zero. Somewhere between zero and 100%. There's a possibility that we could be in the day of the Lord now. Because, depending upon how, say, you interpret Gaza being forsaken. I do think the probability that's greater than zero, but I'm not convinced that it's 100%. So in order for me to feel more strongly that we are in the day of the Lord, I need to see events that are more clear to me that are clear day of the Lord events. And to me, a clear day of the Lord event is the nations dividing the land and the city of Jerusalem, agreeing to create, on paper, a Palestinian state. What I personally believe from understanding my Bible, that Palestinian state will never get fully implemented. The God of Israel will intervene when they seek to implement the agreement. But the agreement to do it, I believe, will be made. When I see the agreement to establish a Palestinian state, I'm going to very strongly start tipping the scale that we're in the day of the Lord. Now, I want to show you another event of the day of the Lord. So the first one I shared with you is dividing the land and city of Jerusalem and what goes along with that is Jews being kicked out of their homes. Those are issues of the day of the Lord. Now, what do we know? That the dividing of the land brings about the judgment of the nations. So the judgment of the nations will happen the day of the Lord. The judgment of the nations, as the Bible specifies, will be in two main contexts. Nations will be at war with each other in general, and specifically what the Bible takes a great deal of effort and time emphasizing is the fall of Babylon. The fall of Babylon and the Babylonian system. Going back to Joel and chapter 3, after we're told in Joel chapter 3 verse 2 that the nations divide the land, in Joel chapter 3 verse 6 they're removing Jews from their homes. What is connected with those two things is Joel chapter 3 verse 9. Proclaim this among the Gentiles, prepare for war. Prepare for war. There will be war between the nations when they divide the land and kick Jews out of their homes. The war between the nations is the judgment of the nations. And then, once we see the war between the nations, it says Joel chapter 3 verse 13, put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. When do you reap the harvest? After you divide the land, after the nations are prepared for war, and then you put in the sickle. Who or what is being harvested? Who's the harvest? The harvest is the 12 tribes of Israel. So the gathering of the 12 tribes of Israel is after the dividing of the land and war between the nations. Now if we go to Psalm 126, this is the traditional psalm that is said after you're done eating. So this is what you're to remember every day after you eat. Psalm 126, when the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. The returning of the captivity of Zion is the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel. So the subject is turning again the captivity of Zion. The subject is uniting the 12 tribes of Israel. I want you to look to see what that is linked with. Verse 6, he that goes forth and weeps, bearing precious seed, will doubtless come again, bringing his sheaves. That's his harvest. Bringing his harvest with him. When he turns again the captivity of Zion, we were like those that dream. The uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel. Bringing your sheaves with you. The harvest is the 12 tribes of Israel. So when it says, put in the sickle for the harvest is ripe, that's the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel. So here you have your basic outline. The dividing of the land of Israel brings about the judgment of the nations. In the judgment of the nations will result in the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel. Now, how do I understand that? It's likened to what happened in Egypt. That Israel got redeemed out of Egypt when Egypt was being judged. The judgment, the plagues on Egypt was likened in the end of days to the judgment upon the nations. Pharaoh not letting the children of Israel go is likened to the beast system not wanting and opposing the 12 tribes of Israel being united and returning home. The judgment upon Pharaoh is the judgment that will come upon the nations for trying to keep the 12 tribes of Israel from returning to the land of Israel and returning home. That in the midst of the judgment that happened in Egypt, Pharaoh and all of Egypt knew that he's the Lord. So in the future, when the nations are judged and he gathers the 12 tribes of Israel, the world will know that Yeshua is the Messiah. That's your parallel. Now we're going to look at, in the day of the Lord, the fall of Babylon. We go to Isaiah in chapter 13. Isaiah chapter 13, verse 1 says, "The burden of Babylon." And then it says, verse 6, "How, for the day of the Lord is at hand, it will come as destruction from the Almighty." So we're talking about Babylon falling in the day of the Lord. And here's what it says about Babylon falling in the day of the Lord. Isaiah 13, verse 17 says, Isaiah 13, 17, "I will stir up the Medes against them." The Medes are stirred up against Babylon in the day of the Lord. And this fall of this Babylon is so huge that the prophets emphasize it. So we're talking about Babylon falling in the day of the Lord, which means it's an end time nation. So my question is there an end time nation who's in a conflict with the Medes? Who are the Medes? They're the Iranians. Is there an end time? If we believe we're in the end of days, then we should see in our current world if there is a powerful nation that whose fall would be hugely significant that is in a conflict with the Medes. Do I see that in today's world? Yeah, it's the United States concerned about Iran. So a conflict between the United States and Iran, which I interpret to be a military conflict, which hasn't happened yet, is a Day of the Lord event. So when I see not only the dividing of the land, but when I see a military conflict between the United States and Iran, we're in the Day of the Lord. Now if we go and look at other places in the prophets, we see how the fall of Babylon is amplified. Isaiah chapter 13 speaks about it. Now it continues into Isaiah chapter 14. Now when Isaiah is written, it wasn't written in chapter and verse. So put together the thought. You have the fall of Babylon, Isaiah 13, and then it says, chapter 14, verse 1, "The Lord will have mercy upon Jacob. He will choose Israel, and he will set them in their own land." You see that? In the day of the Lord, Babylon is in conflict with the Medes, and he's going to choose Jacob and set him into his own land. When's he got to bring Jacob back into his own land? When Babylon falls, is in a conflict with the Medes. So we have the dividing of the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. That is an agreement to sign the Palestinian state. We have war between the nations in general, but specifically what's highlighted is the fall of Babylon, and they are in a conflict with the Medes. And as a result of that, Jacob is returning to his own land. The return of the 12 tribes of Israel. So Isaiah chapter 13 speaks about the fall of Babylon. Now we have Isaiah chapter 21, verses 1 through 10, speaks about the fall of Babylon. Then we have Isaiah chapter 47, talks about the fall of Babylon. Then we have Jeremiah chapter 50 and 51, talks about the fall of Babylon. Then, if we go to the book of Revelation, not only is the prophets highlighting the fall of Babylon, but Revelation chapter 14, verse 8 speaks about Babylon is fallen and is fallen. And then we have Revelation 16, verse 19. Babylon was given a cup of the wine of the fierceness of the wrath of God. Babylon falling. Then you have Revelation chapter 18, Babylon falling. So it is huge, the fall of Babylon, as a part of the end of days judgment. Now in Isaiah chapter 13, it mentions about being in a conflict with the Medes. That is also mentioned as a parallel thought, parallel passage, in Isaiah in chapter 51 and verse 11. Isaiah 51 verse 11. It says, "Make bright the arrows, gather the shields. The Lord has raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes. For his device is against Babylon to destroy it." The Medes are against Babylon. Now, is this talking about something that did happen? Yes, in part. But is it talking about end of days events? The answer is yes, because in that verse we have the phrase associated with the Medes being against Babylon is it's the vengeance of the Lord and the vengeance of his temple. That's the time of it. The time of the vengeance of the Lord. When is the vengeance of the Lord, and why is his vengeance? Isaiah in chapter 34 and verse 8 says this. Isaiah 34 verse 8. "It is the day of the Lord's vengeance for the controversy of Zion." His vengeance is over the controversy of Zion. But what is the controversy of Zion? The controversy of Zion is, to whom does the land belong to? The nations will say, we need to create a Palestinian state in the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem. The God of Israel is going to say, no. I am going to show that I made a covenant with Abraham. And I am going to return my people. I'm going to show you, the God of Israel says, who I am. I'm going to show you how powerful I am. And the very place that you want to create a Palestinian state is where I'm going to bring my people back. Now, who can do that? No one but the Almighty. So Ezekiel in chapter 37 is a vision of dry bones. Then it begins in verse 15 by talking about the reunification of Judah and Ephraim, the 12 tribes of Israel. Then here's what it says regarding the reunification of the 12 tribes in Ezekiel chapter 37 verse 22. "I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel." He's got to take Ephraim and Judah and make them one nation. And where is it designated that he's going to bring them back? To the mountains of Israel. Guess what? The mountains of Israel is where the enemy says it belongs to us. And they are going to solve the peace of the world by making the mountains of Israel a Palestinian state. But if the God of Israel is going to take Ephraim and Judah and bring them back to the mountains of Israel, do you see a conflict? Do you see a showdown? Well, what was the historical Egyptian exodus about? A showdown between Pharaoh and the God of Israel who said, "Let my people go." We're having a showdown. So he's got to show how powerful he's going to bring his people to the very place that the nations thought was going to have peace, or they desired, and that was their solution for the peace. Now we go to Jeremiah in chapter 50. Remember, Jeremiah 50 and 51, both chapters speaks about the fall of Babylon. And it says in Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 4, "In those days and in that time." What does the phrase "in those days and in that time" mean? The day of the Lord. It's another way of saying the day of the Lord. When's the day of the Lord? It's that day. When's the day of the Lord? At that time. What time? The day of the Lord. Well, what time are you referring to? You know, the Messianic era. You know, the good time. In those days and in that time. It says, "The children of Israel will come, they and the children of Judah together." So that Israel and Judah are dwelling in Babylon in the day of the Lord. And it says, "They will seek the Lord their God," that's the Messiah, and they will ask the way to Zion. When Babylon is being attacked, Israel and Judah in Babylon are seeking the Lord their God, and they are asking the way to Zion. You know why they're asking the way to Zion? Because they don't know it. They're asking the way to Zion. Do you know what the way to Zion is? You're hearing the message about it. It's being explained to you yesterday and today in these sessions, the way to Zion. The way to Zion is Messiah ruling over 12 tribes of Israel united, where they acknowledge who the Messiah is, and they're following his Torah. That's the way to Zion. But they're asking the way to Zion, Jeremiah 50 verse 5, in a perpetual covenant that will not be forgotten. Notice when they get to Zion, they enter into a perpetual covenant that will not be forgotten. What is that covenant? It's the covenant of peace of the Messianic era. It's Israel being the head of all nations, Messiah ruling and reigning over them, and being a blessing to all nations, and never more going into captivity. That's the perpetual covenant that will not be forgotten. So what are these major events of the Day of the Lord that I'm looking of, that I regard as central and significant, I didn't give you a complete list because there are a lot more things that happen in the Day of the Lord than what I've mentioned. But something that's central that we can recognize and that we know that we're there. It's an agreement to establish a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. It's Jews being kicked out of their homes. And by the way, the agreement will need for Jews to be kicked out of their homes in Judea, Samaria, and in Jerusalem. And it's the fall of Babylon, and Babylon having a conflict with the Medes. And the judgment is coming upon the nations and upon Babylon because of the controversy of Zion. What nation in the world is most responsible for making it possible for there to one day be an agreement between Israel and the PLO to establish a Palestinian state? The U.S. of A. So guess who's going to get the harshest judgment of any country in the world? He too, much is given, much is required. So the harshest judgment is going to come upon the United States of America. Then, if you look at the fall of Babylon in Revelation chapter 18, what is emphasized regarding Babylon in Revelation chapter 18, verse 11. Revelation 18, verse 11. The merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buys their merchandise anymore. In talking about the collapse of this Babylonian system, it emphasizes the economic collapse of it. And the economic collapse is going to be triggered in part, but not exclusively, in part through a military attack. The economy can fall without a military attack, but a military attack will contribute to an economic collapse. Back to Jeremiah chapter 50. When it talks about the fall of Babylon, Jeremiah in chapter 50, it talks about a military attack. Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 9, I will raise to cause against Babylon an assembly of great nations from the north country, and they will set themselves in array against her. From thence she shall be taken, their arrow shall be as a mighty expert man, and none will return in vain. And verse 15, it is the vengeance of the Lord. It's happening at the time of his vengeance. His vengeance is over the controversy of Zion. So, I believe this judgment will be immediate, quick, soon, after there's agreement that the United States will push to establish a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. Now, Jeremiah 50, verse 16, cut off the sower from Babylon and him that handles the sickle in the time of the harvest. Cut off the sickle in the time of the harvest. Cut off the sickle where? In Babylon. So in Babylon, you won't be able to put in the sickle because of what's happening to it. So, am I seeing in the world today the situation where there is economic problems which could develop into a real economic collapse of the United States? I'm seeing it. I watch the economic indicators on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis. And the United States economy and the world economy started, the economic indicators not only deteriorated, but they like fell off the cliff beginning in November and December of 2008, wherein the readings of different economic indicators are like the worst they've been in some instances since they've been keeping records. Just falling off the cliff. And so therefore we see the possibility that as the United States would be interested in getting a peace agreement signed to establish a Palestinian state, in the natural world the situation is such that it could experience an economic collapse within days, weeks, or months of whenever an agreement to establish a Palestinian state would be signed. Next, what I want to go over with you is allow us to understand two significant signs that the God of Israel gives us in the book of Revelation. Two significant signs. It's in Revelation chapter 12. There are two signs. The first one, Revelation 12:1, there appeared a great, my Bible says a wonder in heaven, and the cross reference says a sign. There appeared a great sign in heaven, and here is the first sign. A woman that's clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, upon her head a crown of 12 stars. So there's a woman with 12 stars. Who is the woman and what do the 12 stars represent? The 12 stars represent the 12 tribes of Israel. You remember? It was told Abraham his descendants would be as the stars. So a woman with 12 stars is the 12 tribes of Israel. So what is this? The woman has a crown on her head in addition to the 12 stars. What's the crown represent? The crown represents ruling and reigning. When does Israel and the 12 stars, so the 12 tribes of Israel, when does Israel and the 12 tribes rule and reign? Once Messiah sets his feet down on the Mount of Olives. So, how do we know that that day is coming? I'm going to give you a sign to indicate that that day is coming. The sign is the woman with the crown and the 12 stars. Now, the woman, the sign, when does it appear? It says she's in Revelation 12, verse 2, she's travailing in birth, and she's in pain to be delivered. So when does this sign appear, and when does she give her child? When does she have her child? It says that she does it in travail, in the time of travail. So when is this? The tribulation period. So we have the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel that is happening at the time of her travail, during the tribulation period. How this is going to happen, I believe, based upon the principle that the 12 tribes got divided up into northern kingdom and southern kingdom. So that's a prophecy of the end of days. In the end of days, there will be two states of Israel. The current state of Israel and one that doesn't exist yet. How does the second one get created according to this scenario? That when the current government of Israel signs an agreement to establish a Palestinian state, meaning they're saying that they no longer recognize as being a part of the current state of Israel, Judea and Samaria, East Jerusalem, or the Gaza. When they sign a piece of paper and says, that does not belong to us. That's what the signing of the piece of paper means. Jews, religious Jews, who are living in Judea, Samaria, the West Bank, who are designated to be kicked out of their homes, they have a choice to make. They can just say, well, I'll just get up and leave my home and I'll go live under the government of Israel, who just thought so much about me, the Torah, and the covenant that was made with the God of Israel that they just kicked me out of my home. I can go and live under them. Or I could stand up for the Torah. I could stand up for the covenant made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's what I believe they'll choose to do. Stand up for the covenant made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So how do they stand up? Their leaders will make an announcement with their mouth, a public declaration, and they will say, we do not recognize that this land is to be a Palestinian state. We don't recognize it. We declare it as belonging to the covenant people of the God of Israel through his promise made to Abraham, and we declare our independence from the current state of Israel, and we call upon the God of Israel and the Messiah of Israel to stand for the covenant. That will be an act of defiance, and through that declaration is how that nation gets born. And it will happen at the time of travail, during the tribulation. Now we go to Isaiah chapter 66. Now the Bible calls that independent state, the Bible calls it Zion. So the biblical term for that state would be the state of Zion. Now in Isaiah chapter 66 verse 8, it says these words, Isaiah 66 verse 8. Who has heard such a thing? Who has seen such things? Shall the earth be made to bring forth in one day, or shall a nation be born at once? A nation gets born in one day at once. A nation gets born at once. Who is this nation? It's Zion. For as soon as Zion travailed, as soon as she travailed, what's her travail? Declaring herself to be a nation in one day. That's her travail. Why? Because the current government of Israel will oppose it. All the nations of the world will oppose it. The Arab world will oppose it. The PLO will oppose it. Now it's you and the God of Israel against the world. How do you like those odds? Not bad, huh? No, that's what the fight is about. The God of Israel and those who will stand for his covenant against the world. As soon as she travailed, which means as soon as she is giving birth, as soon as she's declaring a state, she brought forth her children. Who's the children of Zion? The 12 tribes united. So the declaration of that state begins the process of the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel. Verse 9, shall I bring to the birth and not cause to bring forth, says the Lord? Then it says in verse 14, when you see this, when you see what? Zion born in a day. When you see this, your heart will rejoice. Your bones will flourish like an herb. You'll be excited. You know why? Because it means the coming of the Messiah, the end of the exile, and the defeat of the enemies of God. And now catch this phrase. When you see this, the hand of the Lord will be known to his servants. His hand will be known to his servants and his indignation toward his enemies. What's his indignation? The vengeance of the Lord. When was the last time in history that the hand of the Lord was known to his servants and his indignation to his enemies? The deliverance from Egypt. That's when he showed who his people was in Goshen, and he made a distinction between what happened to them and what happened in the rest of the land of Egypt. So we have a change in how we can see the God of Israel working in the world once that day happens. If you're his servant and you obey him, his hand is toward you. Woe be to the person who's against you. See, right now we don't think that way. We think in survival mode. They're against us. How can I hide so that, you know, they don't come against me and hurt me and harm me? And the reason why we have to be in that mode is because we're still in the days of being in exile. But once the day of redemption comes, which is the birth of the state of Zion, that's the first day of redemption, then it's different. Now, the wicked get judged. The righteous get delivered. And it's clear and distinct for all to know who's wicked and who's righteous. This is the sign of Revelation in chapter 12. Now, it says in Revelation chapter 12, verse 1, that the sun and the moon is under her feet. You know, when it's under your feet, it's a way of saying you have dominion or authority over it. You're ruling and reigning over it. What does the sun and the moon, what does it symbolize? It has to be an enemy or something that the woman struggled against. The moon is Islam. Once Messiah returns, Israel doesn't have to struggle with Islam anymore. That's the end of Islam. The sun is Greco-Roman Christianity, which linked itself with sun worship. There won't be a Baptist church when Messiah returns. It will be him teaching Torah from Jerusalem. Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 3. We will be following the Torah, keeping the Sabbath, keeping his festivals when he returns. There won't be a Baptist church. So the days of a Baptist church or a Pentecostal church or whatever denomination that you can think of in Protestant or Catholic Christianity, their days are numbered. They're not going to exist. Now, the God of Israel every day prophesies of that. The sun rises in the east. Where was the beginning of civilization at? In the east. But the sun sets in the west. The sun sets in the west. The west is Western civilization. Where does the sun go down? It prophesies of the end and the destruction of Western civilization, the setting of the sun. Every day. Every day is a prophecy. And the setting of the sun is the end of, at the end of day. See, it's at the end of the day that the sun sets. At the end of the day is the end of Greco-Roman Christianity. because the Torah will go forth from Jerusalem. So, from this sign, from this event, there's 3.5 years left. Because in Revelation chapter 12, that once this woman gives birth, it says in verse 6, she flees in the wilderness for 1,260 days. When the children of Israel came out of Egypt, on their way to the promised land, what was between coming out of Egypt and going into the promised land? The wilderness. You see, they put the blood of the lamb on the doorpost, and you know what they did? They fled into the wilderness. They fled in the wilderness because they were going to the promised land. And now let me read you how poetically that time is described. It's in Exodus in chapter 19. Exodus chapter 19 and verse 3. You shall say to the house of Jacob, verse 4, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. I bear you on eagle's wings. They went into the wilderness, and he bore them on eagle's wings. Revelation chapter 12, verse 6. The woman fled in the wilderness. Verse 14, the woman was given two wings of a great eagle. Went in the wilderness and was given two wings of a great eagle. Revelation 12 is describing that with the birth of the state of Zion begins the Exodus, or the return to the land of Israel. There's 3.5 years designated for the return. Now, what happened historically when Israel fled in the wilderness? Pharaoh and his army came after the children of Israel. And the children of Israel were concerned, but he said, go through the sea. And what happened to Pharaoh and his army? They drowned in the Red Sea. So Revelation chapter 12 and verse 15. The serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he may cause her to be carried away of the flood. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon cast out of his mouth. You see, the same thing's happening. Revelation 12, the sign, this first sign is given, is the birth of the state of Zion. So from the birth of the state of Zion to Messiah sets his feet down on the Mount of Olives is 3.5 years. When does Messiah set his feet down on the Mount of Olives? On Yom Kippur. So you subtract 3 years from Yom Kippur, you get what? Yom Kippur. So 6 months from Yom Kippur, you get what time of year? Passover. So when is the state of Zion born? Passover. The state of Zion is born at Passover. Now we have a second sign that happens at the same time. In Revelation 12, verse 3, there appeared another wonder in heaven, or a sign. And it says, a great red dragon, 7 heads, 10 horns, 7 crowns. That is in a conflict with the woman that's given birth. And this great red dragon and the 7 heads, 10 horns, and 10 crowns continues on into Revelation 13, and it's called a beast. And in Revelation chapter 12, verse 5, it says, power was given to the beast for 42 months. So how long is this beast ruling? 42 months. Power was given for 42 months. So when does the rule begin? 3.5 years, 42 months before Messiah sets his feet down on the Mount of Olives. He sets his feet down on the Mount of Olives at Yom Kippur. So 3.5 years from Yom Kippur is when? Passover. You see, the enemy is a counterfeit. God begins his redemption at Passover. The enemy sets up his opposition at Passover. They both come into existence at the same time. What is this beast that comes into existence and rules for 42 months? What is it? I believe it is one world government. It is an agreement by the nations to establish formally one world government. One world government has been here in functioning behind the scenes ever since the creation of the United Nations. So we've had it, but not full recognized commitment by the nations to honor United Nations laws. So how has world government got to come about? This is my belief. It comes about from an economic collapse in the world and an economic collapse upon the United States of America. What do I mean by an economic collapse? Let me give you a definition of what I specifically mean by economic collapse so you can know how and when this event happens. That's what I'm talking about. It is when the U.S. government declares itself bankrupt. That's what I mean by an economic collapse. The U.S. government is not able to pay its bills. It's bankrupt. That's the event that I'm talking about. That's the collapse that I'm talking about. Wherein the U.S. dollar becomes, in essence, worthless. Because the government can't use the dollar to pay its bills. Now, since World War II, has there been an effort in the world to globalize the world, to interconnect the world economically, politically? Has there been an effort? Yeah. Who has made it most possible for this to happen? Abu Dhabi? How about Zimbabwe? How about the United States of America has been the most responsible? So the effort of globalization, there's more involved. There's more entities involved in the effort of globalization than the United States of America. There's more to it than just the United States. But the United States, would you not agree with me, leads the effort? So who would be the head of the system to globalize? If the system to globalize is the beast system, who's the head of that system? How about the United States? So let me give you an application of Revelation 13. I am not going to say that this application is the only meaning, because Hebraically there's the meanings are multifaceted, but I do believe it is a credible meaning. It may not be the only meaning, and it is this. Revelation chapter 13, verse 3. One of the heads, which means it has multiple heads, one of the heads of the beast was wounded to death. It was wounded. So if the beast represents the globalization of the world, one of the heads got wounded to death. It looked like it was dead. You know what I think that event is? The economic collapse of the United States. The whole world would panic if the United States went bankrupt. It will affect the whole world. Okay, if the United States goes bankrupt, we just can't call life over. What are the politicians going to try to do? If the bankruptcy of the United States means the dollar's not worth anything and the whole world's using dollars, we need a replacement for the dollars. So what would be a credible replacement for the dollars? How about a world currency? And would the world think that that's a good idea to have a world currency and that that currency is not tied to any single fate of an individual country in the world that causes the world to be unstable? Yeah. So I believe from an economic collapse of the United States that the world will agree to one world government in a one world currency. And when they do, everyone will feel like things are going to get better. And there will be an immediate recovery in the world financial system. And here's what it says. And his deadly wound was healed. It was the healing of the financial system from the collapse of the United States. And when the wound got healed, that is one world government, one world currency, all the world wondered after the beast or followed it. The world will say, yes, this is our solution. Yes, this is what we got to commit and do. One world government, one world currency. So what I'm putting forth is the one world government and the one world currency comes about from the economic collapse of the United States of America. And it when it gets set up, this system rules for 42 months. So one world government and one world currency gets set up at Passover. The state of Zion gets declared at Passover. That I'm confident of. What I don't know is what year it is. Could it be 2009? Well, we have to have an agreement for a Palestinian state and an economic collapse probably within the next month or 6 weeks if it is 2009. Now, we have signs that the world wants to get an agreement made quickly. We have signs that the economy is not very good. But it's not a sure bet that it's going to happen in the next 6 weeks. So we'll watch and see whether it's Passover 2009. If it's not, then maybe it's Passover 2010. But these are the things we need to be watching for so that when they happen, we know what it means and we know what to do. Isaiah says, when you see it, you will rejoice. And that is your hope. You know that your redemption is coming. You know the hand of the Lord will be made known to his servants and his indignation toward his enemies. Now, there's got to be a lot of travail. I'm not a woman. I've never had a baby. But women who have had a baby knows that it's challenging and painful to have a baby. But when the baby's born, you forget about the pain because of the joy of the baby. So it's got to be painful. What in the world does the Bible try to describe the pain of Israel and the redemption? Of all the things in the world, what is it compared to? A woman having a baby. That's the best analogy that God can give. And how are you going to feel when the baby gets born? When the deliverance, you're going to be happy. That's the celebration of the wedding, celebration of the event. Now, in order to give you another angle of Zion, and that this sign in Revelation 12 is the birth of Zion. Zion is how you pronounce the word in English. The way you say it in Hebrew is Zion. Zion is how you pronounce it in Hebrew. And Zion or Zion consists of four Hebrew letters. The four Hebrew letters are the letter Zadi, the letter Yod, the letter Vav, and the letter Nun. Those are the four letters that make up the word Zion. Now, for those of you who know how the Hebrew language works, all Hebrew words go down to a two or a three-letter root word. In all Hebrew words that contain the same root letters, all Hebrew root words that contain the same two or three root letters, the meaning of that word has a similar associated meaning. It has a family meaning. Every word that contains the same root letters. There is another Hebrew word that has the same letters as Zion. And the Hebrew word is Zion. The only difference is what we would call vowels. But in the original Hebrew language, you don't have vowels. So if I'm going to say Zion, I write it Zadi, Yod, Vav, Nun. If I'm going to say Zion, I write it the same way. Zadi, Yod, Vav, Nun. So when I see Zadi, Yod, Vav, Nun, how do I know whether it's Zion or Zion? The other words around it, context, is going to tell me which one it is if I don't have the vowels. What does Zion. What is that? In the Strong's Dictionary, for those of you who want to write this down, it is the Strong's number 67. I'm giving you the Strong's number for Zion. It is 6726. Zion. And in the Strong's Concordance, it will say it's the same as 6725, which is Zion, because it's the same letters. Zion means, here's the definition, it means a guiding pillar or a sign. Zion means a sign. So I can read the word Zion as a sign. So when it says in Revelation 12:1, there appeared a great sign in heaven, I could, I don't have to, I'm not required to, but I could read it if it's in the correct context. I could read it, there appeared a great Zion in heaven. And that's exactly what Revelation 12:1, it's the sign is Zion, the woman with 12 stars. Now, you know in the scripture where it says the Jews require a sign? That is sort of like a play on the Hebrew. Because if you would ask an Orthodox Jew, is Yeshua the Messiah, he would say no. And if he really told you the core reason why he says no, it's because the Messiah gathers the 12 tribes of Israel, and he will say Yeshua didn't gather the 12 tribes of Israel. That's the core reason. In other words, translated, is he the Messiah? We require a sign. No, we require Zion. In order to know who the Messiah is, we require Zion. We require the uniting of the 12 tribes of Israel. So here, there appeared a great sign in heaven. The last thing I'm going to cover before we take our break in this session, because I think my 90 minutes is up again, is Jeremiah in chapter 31. Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 15. Rachel, Jeremiah 31, 15, Rachel is weeping for her children. She refuses to be comforted because they were not. So, no comfort in weeping is associated with exile. No comfort in weeping is associated with exile. That's why Rachel was weeping. Now in verse 16 it says, refrain your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears. This is why you're supposed to quit weeping. They will come again to the land of the enemy. Quit weeping because your children are going to return to their land. You see the principle? Returning to the land, no weeping. Outside of the land, weeping. Then it says in verse 17, there's hope that your children will come again to their own border. Quit weeping. Your children will come to their own border. Now, who's the children of Rachel? Benjamin and Joseph. And Joseph has Ephraim. Well, here it mentions Ephraim. Verse 18, I've heard Ephraim bemoaning himself. Verse 20, is Ephraim my dear son? It's speaking about Ephraim, who's the northern kingdom. So let's put the thought together. Rachel is weeping for her children, specifically in the context of Jeremiah 31. She's weeping for Ephraim, the 10 tribes, the northern kingdom. And she's weeping because they're in exile, and they haven't returned to the land of Israel and united with Judah. But then she's told, hey, refrain yourself from weeping, because Ephraim is going to return to his own border. So you see the subject? The subject is Ephraim returning to his own border. The northern kingdom returning to the land. That's the subject. Verse 21. Set you up, the word is Zion, which means a sign. So I could read this, set you up Zion. That's translated in the King James as a sign or a waymark, because the vowels that are in there, the word is Zion, which means a waymark or a sign. But that's also the meaning, the family meaning, of Zion. So I can read it, set you up Zion. So you got what's said? When is the northern kingdom going to return back to the land? When Zion is set up. And that's the sign of Revelation 12. So, you don't have to pray about it. You don't need to get a feeling, or I feel like I'm supposed to go back to the land today. He's got to give you a clear sign to know when you're to return. When you see Zion declared at Passover, that is when you are given the divine permission by the God of Israel to begin the process to go back to the land, and we're given 3.5 years to accomplish it. I'm going to continue to share with you the details of the return and the events associated with it in our final session, which is coming up after our break. Pray it's been a blessing. Shalom and Yeshua. Amen.